You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang, Dwayne.
Hey.
And me, Brian.
It's the short-shaped, the yes. Smaller gang.
Niall's on lates.
Yeah.
So he's not here. He's busy working.
Mm.
Okay, let's get down to it with Brian's blunder. I started watching the wrong episode of Laughing Salesman. And so I've only seen the first half of the episode we're supposed to watch. Which is Laughing Salesman episode 10, The Person in the Acquired Film, and Fake Grandchild.
So if you want, if you've only seen The Person in the Acquired Film.
Yeah.
If you want, we can leave fake grandchild till next week and do three Laughing Salesmen.
We could do. It's
slightly confusing, but
if we miss one, it's not like we're going to lose a plot.
Okay.
This first one involves a construction worker who
has been
taking photos of the construction he's working on with a disposable camera.
Because he forgot his smartphone that day or something.
He goes to throw his lunch away, leaves it on the bench, but when he gets back, it's not there. He's like, oh, where's it gone? Looks around, and there it is under the bench. But then we see around the corner the laughing salesman laughing.
Yeah, he's specifically done this. This isn't like, oh, they happen to be on that bench and that whole mix up. It's like, no, this is him, all him.
Yes, and so he takes the photo. He develops the photos that think they're his, and there's an attractive woman in the photos.
Yeah, they're holiday pictures.
And then Moguru forces himself into his life.
Yeah, like kind of like, hello, I'm in here now. You got to deal with me. And at least he has the sense to say, I'm going to call the cops on you.
Yeah. Don't you want to meet this woman? He's like, do you know this woman? Of course I know this woman. He says, of course I know the one, but he doesn't like go as far as saying, I'm the one who swapped the cameras around.
That's pretty much implied, yeah.
Yeah, so he tells him where to go and meet her, where she works.
She actually lives not far from his house, so.
Yes.
Mm.
And he's looking at the people as they come out, and he goes, ah, there she is, but her friend's there as well, who was also in the photos.
Her not as attractive friend who makes her look better by comparison, I believe, was his description of her,
who's quite pushy, and he ends up dating her instead.
Yeah, he takes her out for like a few dates, but he's not too pleased about it because he figured at some stage she's bound to bring her friend, right?
And then Moguru explains, no, she's never going to bring her friend because she's in love with you.
Well, I mean, like, besides the excessive use of love and even the fantasy scenario, it's actually pretty good advice that I think a lot of people should follow.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Don't date someone to get to their friends and shit.
But he doesn't follow the advice.
He's lonely.
Yes, because he tells him that you've got to stop dating. If you don't have any feelings for this woman, you've got to stop dating her.
Yeah, which is good advice, actually, Moguru. But I know you're setting him up for a fall, and that's the whole point of this.
So they do split up, don't they? But then she says something like, oh, if you're ever lonely, you can always call me. And then he does feel really lonely.
Yeah, he's drunk one day. Because I think he finds one of the photos in his house that must have slipped out of the thing. He's kind of reminding himself. He's like, not where I want to be.
May have snuck in and placed it there.
That's probably what I think actually happened. Yeah, that seems more likely. Dear. I wonder if you rewatch it and if they have that photo in their hands, so you know it's Moguru just really fucking egging him on. I'd
possibly
have to check that.
Yeah. So yeah, and Moguru is like, "Oh, you said you weren't going to see her again," and then flash forward to him being
5 minutes later. Who knows?
Being a miserable husband to,
and increasingly getting a fatter wife.
Yes.
Yeah. And she's just gotten way bossier as well, it's not worked out well for him.
There you go. Yes, as you say, it is good advice given by a disreputable source.
Maybe that's how he managed to do all that other advertising, because you think if they use him as a salesman in actual products, it would make you really suspect of the products, but he actually gives good advice. It's just you have to follow it is the key, I think. Yeah.
So yeah, we can talk about fake grandchild next week.
Sure. Another thing I liked at the end of this one is when he's walking past those love hotels again, and there's a couple coming out, and they kind of see him, and they back into the thing just to, like, avoid his path. I thought that was quite good.
I will say the episode 11, the first story, I haven't seen the end of it, but it shapes up to be something really quite different.
Okay.
Yeah, but we'll get to that next week.
Sure.
Anyway, onwards towards, what was it? Makaruna Akuno Gundan, episode 10, Reconciliation.
They get the gang back together.
They do, yes.
Well, what's his name?
I finally wrote their names in the cheat sheet.
Yeah, okay.
Just as we're ending spring season. I'm going to guess this is sticking around for another 13 episodes at least. That's not the cheat sheet. Cheat sheet spring. Yeah, I even wrote down which one's got which ears. So the way to distinguish them.
Because I was going to say the one with the black ears, yeah. Also, I thought the one with the pink ears was a girl. Until this episode when they keep saying he.
I question it. So Don is the talking hippo.
That's right.
I believe Pepu is the light-eared dog man and Chiku is the dark-eared dog man.
Right.
That's it. There's the characters.
not the side characters or anything. Okay.
No, I haven't got around to write their names down yet.
Right.
Come on, it's taken me 10 weeks to do that. So.
I suppose that's true. The delinquent tricks Chiku into handing out flyers for... is it a delinquent festival or something?
I think it might be
a LAN or something.
A loafer. It's a loafer festival. He's not delinquent, he's a loafer. Yeah.
Right.
Delinquent would require him actually doing things.
You're right, yeah. He doesn't put that much effort in to the point where he gets someone else to do the job of handing out the flyers for his loafer.
Yes, I believe you can come and see him play video games, get your photo taken with him, and there's a few other things.
That's probably why I thought it was like a LAN or something that's actually a thing.
And there's a picture of him wearing cool sunglasses.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, he wants to throw them away, but a job's a job. And after an old lady agrees to take a pamphlet, lots of other women start taking pamphlets from him as well.
Because, yeah, he realizes that his charm point is that he's cute. He's a cute little dog man.
But then he ruins it all by saying, yes, everyone take some more garbage from me.
Garbage? I thought this was useful. Oh, dear.
And then he tries to pay him with a deluxe invitation to this event. But he does seem to manage to get 4,000 yen out of him.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he beat him up. It's not entirely clear what happened there. But,
And we discover he goes and meets Don, who's been paid in ice cream.
Well, ice cream coupons.
Yes.
Coupons for free ice cream. He just keeps pulling more ice cream from behind his back.
And so they go and find Chiku, how do they describe it? It's something which has cropped up in Laughing Salesman.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. He's not minding a house, he's basically being the person who lives in the show house.
Yes.
And he makes like, what is it, 15,000 yen or something?
Something like that, yes.
Something like reasonable for like doing nothing. And it's pretty good. But they managed to ruin it. Because of course they do. Because there's a noise complaints, I think.
Yeah, they shut the project down and so they're all out of work. But at least they're all back together again.
Yeah, and all of that within 4 minutes. Like, it actually, I noticed it did, like, the recap at the start of this episode. The recap, like, about the first episode, the fact that they're out of spaceship, the fact that they try getting jobs and they had a falling out, and now let's check in on this guy. And it did that in 10 seconds. This show does not fuck around.
It certainly doesn't.
Hmm.
Right, next on the list is 100% Teacher Pascal, episode Was it 10 as well as this? I think it is.
No, I thought it was 9. Episode 9.
Yeah. Sorry, yes. The Seating Change of Destiny, Perfect Plate, and Kitano Yusuke Kun's Code Lesson.
I think that was the same name as the last time it was done.
I think
well,
it may have been, yes. So, yes, the Seating Change of Destiny is it's time for the class to have their seating change, which I assume is a thing which happens in.
I thought you only do that between years, like.
Yes, but maybe they do it between terms or something.
Yeah, just to shake it up or something.
Which Pascal
so is by by lottery.
Yes, but Pascal and they're takes all like the first one.
Yeah,
and they're like teachers don't going to change their seats. And he's like, well, it's all off. We're not changing seats.
And Kanemori Steve steps up.
Yes,
and
then it just repeatedly plays jokes on Kanemori Steve.
Pretty much the whole time. It's just like all seats are ridiculous. I think the first one is like the toilet, which is the most sensible one.
It's the toilet, the roof. Then it's a sensible one, but everybody draws the same number, so they're all sitting on
top of it. So, yeah, that's it.
Then I think it's the principal.
Yeah, he gets stripped again.
Yes, well, because Kanemori Steve makes the mistake of saying he's not happy about this. So the principal thinks, oh.
It's an extra effort, yeah.
Yes. He wants to be naked very well.
Obviously, and he does the, what do you call that bridge thing? He has a specific name for it anyway.
Yeah.
Everyone's really freaked out, understandably.
There's a rocket. There's like a catapult, bungee rope thing.
Mm. And then it just has like the list of like ones that he's just thrown on the ground. And it's like, yes. I think there was like toilet two or something. It's just like, I can't think of any other jokes.
Well, yeah. But then he pulls out one with like a symbol of a devil. And Pascal goes, oh no, you pulled that one. Nobody should pull that one. They're kind of like, why is it in there in the first place?
Yeah. So a demon comes out of hell, presumably, and grabs Steve. And they're all freaking out as to what to do. And then, what's his name? The muscly kid?
Yes, he goes to fight the demon and gets killed again.
Instantly, of course. I think his thing this time was like, pick up a seat for me, guys.
So then Pascal goes into super Pascal mode. And there's the bit where they go, he's got into Super Pascal mode. He's turned into Super Pascal. He goes, no, no, no. And then explains what he's done. And then the explanation is that he's turned into Super Pascal.
Oh, dear.
And then, yes, that he doesn't manage to, just gives up before he's even started, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And then we discover that Steve is still in the class, but he's now possessed by the demon.
Everyone managed to get the same seats except for Steve, who drew Possessed by Demon.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So he takes the class while standing on a pentagram.
Hmm.
That was that. It was just one joke escalated repeatedly.
Yeah. It does that pretty well, though, as we've seen.
Yes. Then in Perfect Plate, cool Pascal Dark is trying to find the next fragment, but he's going through some mountains which are very cold. Then he sees a curry house.
I do like this recurring joke of there just being a general store from Japan randomly in the wilderness. It's pretty great.
Decides to get a curry, and then it's a curry.
The guy's
Pascal.
Like, do you want the hottest one or the medium one or the light one? Give me the hottest one. It's a curry Pascal, yeah. It just looks like a little Pascal on a plate wearing curry as a blanket.
Yes, and demanding that you eat him.
Of course, yeah. He ordered a second hottest one. That's also a curry Pascal. He says that's the same thing, and he's like, no, the sauce is a slightly different color. And then the light one is also slightly lighter in color.
And they demand that they're all lined up so he can compare the colors. And then the cartoon compares all the colors. And I can't remember how it ends. That may have just been the end.
I think he just refuses to eat any of them. I think that's it, yeah. Yes.
And then I can't remember what happened in the code thing. This time
they were at lunch and he was enjoying a refreshing glass of milk, and then the robot guy Yusuke-kun starts gesticulating. I've forgotten the actual one, and Pascal translates it because he can't figure it out. It's is it okay, like, if a robot drinks milk, will he be okay? And he drinks the milk anyway and rusts up.
Oh yeah, I remember now, yes.
It's very quick. So, yeah, there you go.
Next up is Bono Bono, episode 48, 9, 48.
48, I think, yeah.
Find fishing cat.
We get the thrilling conclusion of where's fishing cat?
Yes, which is almost entirely described in the synopsis on Crunchyroll.
Really?
Yes.
Spoilers. Oh, dear.
Well, it doesn't give away the ending that they
find. Oh, that's good. Okay.
That they find him. Yes, it's pretty much what you said here. Yeah, what we could find it here. Fishing cat suddenly disappeared, and Bono Bono, Chipmunk, and Raccoon set out to find him. Along the way, they find. Come on, get out of the way. Sis has a problem. You moused over and I can't read it. Gah. Along the way, they find fishing cat's claw and blood. Bono Bono imagines a scary scenario, which is him hanging off the edge of a cliff.
With someone kind of threatening him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some unseen bear or monster. Raccoon reasons that fishing cat must be nearby, so he begins to sniff around while Chipmunk calls his name so they can finally find him.
But they do that as a contest, obviously.
They do. Yeah. They don't, it's not mentioned in the synopsis, yes. And which Raccoon wins because Chipmunk accidentally steps over the line that Bono's drawn on the ground.
Arbitrary win, but a win, which he initially celebrates and then kind of gets angry about because it's like,
yes,
what does this have to do with finding him?
To be fair, Raccoon has a lot of justifiably angry moments in this episode because Bono and Chipmunk.
I think
Chipmunk.
My favorite one was like, okay, we'll split up. You and Bono, you and Chipmunk go that way, and they just go all the same direction. It's like, well, we're already going this direction. Yeah.
So they find Fishing Cat, and he's just by the lake.
He says he's come to cool down because it's like it's hot in summer, so he's just hanging out here.
And apparently, he's also built a dam.
The kind of thing of them crossing the dam, and he's just like, "Well, I guess we'll go home now." And then Wolverine's dad is like, "Oh, he must have built that dam to save the people of the town and etc."
Well, no, he says it's to save the lake from the flooding behind up further upstream. But I was like, surely the flooding upstream is caused by the fact Fishing Cat has dammed the river which flows into the lake.
It's hard to say if he's a master criminal or a superhero. We don't know yet.
Because you get that line about it. I think Bono says something like, it's awfully calm by the lake.
Mm.
Which makes me think he didn't want to hear the running water, and that's why he built the dam.
It seems like a weird fishing cat thing to do, sure.
My favourite bit is when they find Fishing Cat and they see the lake, Chipmunk and Bono Bono. And just leap straight into the lake. They're more excited to see this lake than they are.
Wow, a lake! Yeah, they've forgotten why they were here. I mean, that's been like the thing of these two episodes. They keep forgetting what they're supposed to be doing. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a fun episode.
Mm.
Fun. Can't remember what the other earlier jokes were, but I'm sure there were. As you say, I really liked the one where they let's split up and then immediately they're all walking in the same direction.
Yeah, there's a few good bits in there.
That's Bono Bono taken care of. Right. Next up, Ninja Girl and Samurai Master.
Hmm.
What's this one called?
Episode 36. I don't know, but like the reason I have Issei and Kanagasi arc in the thing, because that's what was in the Crunchyroll thing, and I was like, that's not fucking right.
No, that's the name of this arc. Yeah, so we don't know what this is called. It may have told you in the episode, but I didn't take a note.
That's the other thing that caught me. But I know it's 36 anyway, so...
Yes, so... We don't see what the secret technique of his is.
It's one of the pervy ones, isn't it?
It slices people's clothes open, yes.
Yeah, that's why it doesn't seem to do much damage. And obviously the... I've forgotten the little ninja retainer guy's name.
Yes, he... Doesn't get called by name very often. Saru.
Yeah, he has the nosebleed reaction. Chidori's none too pleased.
Yeah, that was foreshadowed in the previous episode when he was asking her to take another layer off. the historian shows up.
Yeah, he has an army of ninja historians that follow Chidori everywhere just so he can see all the cool shit. Or record all the cool shit. Yeah.
They leave the... city or town in charge of one of Nobunaga's sons. And then we get a thing where it says, if this show runs a very long time, this character will be really important in Chidori's life.
And then, yeah, I think he makes a direct plea. It's like, please don't cancel us. Oh, dear. And obviously your man Tominori survives and gives it, like, he says, all right, fair enough, I lost, fair is fair. And I did like his thing of, it's like, hey, let's fucking fight again one day. And she's like, yeah, totally. It's like, how about in an hour?
Oh, no, it's something like, how about, it's like a regular fight he wants to set
I think
up.
It's every fortnight or something.
Something along those lines.
And she's like, fucking no, dude, come on.
Yes, he goes off to become a monk, is what happened to him after this.
Okay.
Which I suspect won't... I suspect he won't show up again, because I don't think he... Nobunaga's necessarily important in the rest of his life.
Okay.
Come on, what happened in this? I think it was pretty much it. It was kind of just setting all that stuff up.
There was also the bit where Chidori's trying to hide what she did, like, against Nobunaga's orders, or not without his orders, I mean.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's been told really fucking tall tales, because their battle keeps getting overblown to the point where, like, I think it was like a Godzilla attack, essentially.
So, yeah.
Some fire-breathing monster of some kind, anyway. And the guy who hates ninjas kind of respects Chidori, but still can't.
Yes, until she touches him, and then he breaks out in spots.
Yeah, she's trying to brush a bit of lint off him, breaks out.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed watching it, but I have to say, I'm struggling to remember exactly what happened in it.
It is very short as well, though. So.
It is, yes.
Mm.
That's everything. Yes, that's everything. Now, on to Rage of Bahamut. This episode was called The Way She Was, in which we get a really depressing flashback.
Yeah, the only thing that kind of saved this from being like, holy shit, this is fucking dark, y'all, is Nina's fucking teary eyes. That is the saddest story I've ever heard. At the end, past the credits.
Again. Oh, yeah, that bit is great, yes. The way she goes, I bet L is Moguru. And hang on, that means Moguru is a boy. It's like... That's the takeaway.
Yeah, slowly putting it together. Yeah. It's kind of a good comedy reaction to, like, a really tragic backstory.
And then she says, oh, we'll break out so you can see him again. And
the guard says, no, you won't. Nobody's ever broke out.
She's like, did you hear that? We'll be the first.
Fucking Nina is... Her endless optimism is infectious. It's great. Even after an episode like this, yeah.
Yeah. So, the first half of this is, again, this is kind of really feels like it's written by a woman, because it's like a lot of stuff about how men treat female bosses.
Yeah, and it's kind of the thing of, she's back running the Angar. Is it Angaran Knights? I think I used the wrong one.
Yes, I think you did.
I'm mixing them all up now.
They are the Orlean Knights.
Orlean Knights, sorry.
Yes.
I must be. I don't even know if that's from this. Whatever. she's leading them in battle against the demon. They stop the demon from attacking a town, but the demon wasn't quite dead, and it manages to kill a little girl who was really impressed by her. And everyone's like, huh, stupid woman, couldn't even kill a fucking demon by herself. And I'm like, motherfucker. That thing was huge. You know what I mean? It's
yes.
Kind of like, it's really, she took it to heart a bit too much. It's like, oh, they just want a pretty face for the captain of the guard. And it's like, no, I think she's probably there because she's badass. And the reason she couldn't beat a fucking 60-foot tall demon on her own is because that's a difficult thing to do. And not many people can do that. Dear. But, it's kind of her just getting shit from the side from really minor dudes.
Yes, and there's a lot of it as well. It all builds up. And I think that's supposed to, for exactly as I said, it's supposed to remind people of how men behave in the real world.
No, absolutely.
And just transferring it into a fantasy place. We've got to mention that Happy Birthday showed up last week.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah.
Our second spotting of Happy Birthday now, you can use it without worrying about having to pay rights fees.
I don't know if it's because it was Nina was singing it, but that is a scene that should be really fucking sad. But it's Nina being so pleased. It's like, oh, it's my birthday. Sings it to herself. This should be sad, but I think it's because it's Nina. It isn't.
Yes. Yeah, then if you thought the first half of this episode was sad.
Fucking hell. So, yeah, it's about basically her slow fall where she, again, much like her successor in the Knights, she's trying to convince the newly crowned king, who's such a dick about his coronation as well. Just kind of grabs the crown and is like, I'm king. All praise me.
Yeah, at the same time, it is like, oh, the people are like, oh, aren't the gods supposed to appoint the king?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think when we eventually see how he became king and his story behind it, I'm going to guess that he probably has a not necessarily a justifiable reason, but
an understandable reason that explains
yes,
it.
That you can empathic with his reason for being like that.
Right. Yeah, understanding, but I don't think I'm going to agree with the amount of dickery he's been doing so far.
No, but at the same time, the idea that, he's like somehow... before it was like, oh, humans only got to they didn't even get to choose their own ruler. It was assigned to them by another being from another dimension. It's I think that will play a part in his background.
Likely, yeah.
And particularly because of just him grabbing that, as you say, the way he grabs the crown. There's some bad animation in this episode, but that bit was pretty good.
It's kind of like dips and dives. And
yeah, I think it's worse early on with the crappy knights, but and some of the reaction shots during that coronation. But when it has to be, when it gets to the brutal stuff towards the end, I don't think you can really complain.
God. Well, I could, but mostly about the content. But yeah, it's her fall where she's trying to convince the king to stop going after things. And he's just like, I'm the king, I'll do what I want, I'll make the world better. And he forces her to choose between the gods that she worships and fealty to him.
Yeah.
Because she's a former saint. People who are still religious, if they saw a former saint fucking is going for the king, they'll stop fucking praying to the gods. But obviously she refuses and gets kicked out of town for her trouble.
And yeah, also we see like the Onyx Knights.
We start seeing them appear in the background.
Yes, it kind of feels like they've been there. Maybe they helped him get into this position. And we still really don't know where that power comes from.
Yeah.
Except that Moguru can switch it off.
Yeah, and he can switch off a bunch of things. So it might be something robbed from the gods or whatever. Yeah.
Yes, eventually she prays so hard she gets pregnant.
It's the constant, I just live and suffer now, and I have to sneak into town to try and buy a bag of fucking, I don't know, rice or spice or whatever the hell, and get out of there if I see the cops or the guards. And just, the toil and everything's like, this sucks. And she's still praying, and it's like, well, you've been so good. Immaculate conception. Boom, boom, there you go. And by which I mean, yeah, like you were saying, she gets pregnant and gives birth to, a talking child that big. That quickly, which she's obviously very surprised about.
Yeah, and she's praying to Michael, who was in the first series. Yeah. But of course, we don't necessarily know that it is Michael who's impregnated her.
That's not clear, all right.
No, I suspect that some weirdness will play into that. But so this child, though, does have angel wings for the time
and
being.
Blonde hair rather than the black hair of Moguru, but we see what happens there. It can fly around. It doesn't really display any magical aptitude besides being able to hover and fly and such. And her life suddenly seems brighter and better. Until one stormy night, a random stranger sort of appeared at the thing, and I think she realizes... Did she realize there that it was a god, or...?
I can't remember.
Yeah. I've forgotten her name now, the pink-haired god that we've
Sophie
seen before.
Yeah, the one who's apparently going to help him escape.
Because Sophie L said, hey, guards are chasing me, fucking kick me out of your house, dude, because they're going to arrest you for helping me. And obviously she hides her and refuses to do that. God, it goes bad so fucking quickly. She's about to get killed by I think it's the Black Knights, isn't it?
Yes, it's the Onyx Knights, yeah.
They're threatening to kill her. unless she reveals where this stranger is. And then Elle's powers come on, and same thing as we've seen before. It manages to bring those guys down to their knees and turn off whatever magic keeps them going. And she does a runner.
Yep. Into the city, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Because they're, I think they're combing the countryside, so she has to... They put it like... I think one of the knights says, I think it's the guy with the spray paint across his eyes, the same guy we've seen before. They put like a dragnet kind of thing in, so they've got her within the city. And it's only a matter of time. Oh, God.
So then she hides in a basement where there's... It's one of these places where they're torturing and experimenting on demons.
Yeah, yeah. Some sort of demon... I would say slaving ring, but it appears to be legal.
No, it appears to be more like a slaughterhouse that this place does, though, doesn't
it? Yeah, that's true, actually. There's a lot of dead ones. But it's they seem to have a lot of kids in a cage, and the most of the dead ones seem to be adults. So I'm guessing, you know,
possibly,
kids are easier
yeah.
to... Yeah. Horrible. So she figures, I've got a fucking way out of this. Oh, God, it's the worst. You describe it.
So she gets a load of the demon's blood, pours it on her child, gets a mm-hmm. big pair of scissors, and cuts his wings off.
While embracing him.
Yes.
It's such like... It's like a thing of betrayal, but I think it's supposed to be like that thing of she... wants to save her kid so bad that she'll do her kid grievous bodily harm.
Yeah, I think it's to make them think that he's one of these demon children.
Yeah, so obviously he has nubs of wings, but it's yes. like I think it's just demon wings.
And she also puts like a ball and chain on his ankle as well.
Yeah, so she's put her child into slavery and mutilated his body in order to save him.
Yeah, presumably his throat gets crushed at a later point, or his throat isn't crushed and he refuses to speak.
I think that his tongue is cut out, isn't it? Or I think they do that to the slaves.
I'm pretty sure they said throat was crushed, is what Azazel said in an earlier
episode. Oh, okay. Sorry, I thought it was the tongue was cut out. But that seems to be done to him as a slave rather than... She didn't do that to him there and then.
No, it was just the wing she cut off.
Hmm.
As I say, or maybe he can't talk and he's just so traumatized.
Entirely feasible after all this fucking shit. I mean, like when he smiles back at his mother as well, it's just so like fucking... You can see he understands why this was done, but you can see how much fucking physical pain he's in. Oh, it's the worst.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Gene saying... And they cut me shortly after that. And then Nina is just crying, and then we get the comedy stuff at the end to make you send you home happy, knowing that they're probably going to try and escape next week.
Knowing that they're probably going to try and escape, that they'll probably save the day and save Moguru or El, whichever.
Well, I believe next week's episode is called Declaration of War or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, down the line. Not
which could sure. be all sorts of people declaring war on all... It could be heaven declaring war on mankind declaring war on heaven.
It could be Nina declaring war on everyone. Who knows?
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, it was this was as harrowing as it's got so far.
And yeah.
I suspect as harrowing as it's going to get. I'm not sure it's going to get.
Based off the tone of the rest of it, it's dealing with some pretty dark stuff. But yeah, this is as dark as it's gotten.
Unless we get and like even... an episode of Azazel getting tortured next week. But
Hopefully not.
No. Yeah, where Niall wants the tournament to happen quicker, I kind of want them to break out of prison quickly.
Right, okay. Because, yeah, there's a lot of other stuff to do. And I feel like a big, exciting prison break, just for one episode even, I'd be happy enough with, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Rather than drawing it out, like you say, yeah.
Righty-ho. Anything you want to talk about Attack on Titan this week, or are you going to save it for Niall?
I'm going to save it, because there's a lot to... bring up and shit.
Okay, well, Haybot was... you didn't write the title of Haybot down for me.
No, I'm sorry.
I'll go and look it up now. on the queue. It did have definitely had a title. Hopefully they wrote it in.
This was the...
No, they didn't, no. It was the Blade Runner episode.
Mm,
and the
okay.
Matrix episode. It was something... It was a... It was...
Cyberpunk episode.
It was a convoluted version of... Oh, no, it was very specifically Matrix and Blade Runner.
Oh, okay.
And the title was a joke on Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? So it opens with the best Blade Runner joke I've ever seen. Not that you see many Blade Runner jokes, but...
I suppose that's true,
So
yeah.
You know, is it the tears in rain? What's the speech that Batty does at the end? Yes.
I can't think of the specific one of it. Yeah, yeah.
So it takes that speech and turns it into Roy Batty's online dating profile.
So it's supposed to be like a poetic thing talking about
yes.
himself.
Yeah. Okay. Telling you about all the things he's seen. And so then this Vocabot shows up who wants to find this guy who she saw on an online dating thing. She wants to go out with him. And so they spend the entire episode trying to figure this out. And they do this by hacking into the Nexus, I think they call it.
Right.
Which, of course, doubles as, I believe, both a Blade Runner pun and a Matrix joke.
Hmm.
And so they go on. They're helped out by the hacker mouse, no, the hacker rat, and his mouse friend. So the Vocabot is a rat, and the Screw is a mouse, and they're hackers. And they send them in. They take the what do they call it? The Nebuchadnezzar.
Wait. What Nebuchadnezzar? Is it?
Yeah, but it's a pun. It's got Nozomi at the end, I think. So it's like a.
The robot's a mouse.
So the robot's a rat with a mouse as the Screw. And, yes. So
wasn't there a fucking guy in the Matrix called Mouse?
I think possibly, yes.
For fuck's sake.
And so, yeah, they take the ship, the Nebuchadnezzar or something.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
is the same ship design they used for Nijiru's brother when he first showed up. And they point this out. And then it cuts away to the dinosaur detective man from Japan who goes, what an environmentally friendly anime, recycling backgrounds.
Just on and up to it, okay.
Yeah. And then there's loads of Matrix jokes and Blade Runner jokes. And then it turns out that Roy Batty was actually the dorky Vocabot, who's the psychic of the MoCath trio, the ones who think they're supposed to be the main characters.
Yeah, that kind of sounds like it's trying to be like a cyberpunk thing with the amount of kind of online neckbeards these days who are like, yeah, I'm totally fucking hacking the planet. I'm hidden behind 10 proxies.
Oh, yeah, there's loads of specific Matrix jokes. And there's probably more specific Philip K. Dick ones I missed, but...
Sure.
Yeah, as it goes on, there's lots of, it becomes more Matrix than Blade Runner.
Okay. I guess there's more films to riff on.
Yes. But yeah, this was a pretty good episode. I didn't check to see who wrote it, but it was pretty good. It advanced the plot not one inch.
Or maybe shit that it set up will come up later. Who knows?
Possibly. I mean, next week, I think they've introduced all the Zodiac Vocabots now.
Okay.
And it looks like they all combine next week, so that might have some bearing on things. Or it may not. This is Haybot after all.
Yeah.
I suspect once it goes into its final quarter, which will probably be 39-40, then hopefully it will start advancing the storyline. We shall see. Where the storyline was advanced, though, was in Tiger Mask Double.
Oh, yeah.
This was episode 35, Tiger Fangs Strike.
I do like that title. You can interpret that a few different ways.
Yes. So the good guys lose in the tag match. Makabe gets pinned, but also they take out Tiger the Black at the same time, basically.
Yeah, isn't it that the third like flips Tiger the Black onto him when they're both unconscious in the ring?
Yes.
He's like, hey, ref, count it. And it's like, I don't think he's allowed to pin him if he's unconscious. But all right, the loosey-goosey rules.
So then they're like, oh, what are we going to do? We're a shorter man. Where's Naito? He's only just arrived at the airport.
Who could they possibly get on short notice?
Yes.
And I do like the double freaking blind they pay on this, because you know who you're expecting to see come into the dressing room. And
yes.
It's Young Dragon, obviously. Is it Young Dragon, what he was called?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, I was trying to get his wrestling name right. And he's like, come on, put me in, coach. And like, oh, come on, dude, seriously? And then a mysterious hooded figure comes in, obviously.
Yes, who we all know who it is.
Who could it be? They keep saying stuff like, you were injured recently. I know you have a stake in this fight. And he refuses to say anything when he walks into the room.
Yes, because they don't want to put Okada back in, because they want to save him for the fight with the third as the last battle.
Yeah.
So this is the six-man tag. So it's Tanahashi, Tiger Mask, and then this mysterious stranger.
Mysterious wrestler X.
Yes. And on the other side, it's going to have to be the Miracles and... what's the other guy, little guy called?
Miracles 1 and 2 and Big Tiger the 2nd.
Yes, that's it.
It's just called the 2nd, isn't it?
He is, yes.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they announce, they go, who's this third guy? Who's this mystery man? And he takes his hood off. My God, it's Tiger the Dark. And Kevin's like, what? And then for most of the rest of the episode...
He'd heard earlier that Takuma was in the stage. He's like, oh, he was coming to see us. He should have just told us. Ah, what a guy, huh? Sitting in the audience, totally, like, just watching and not going to get involved with the other guys. Like, well, what?
Yeah, and then most of the match is Kevin losing his mind and Tiger the Dark gradually getting his battle senses back.
Yeah, his wrestling... Yeah. I forget what they call it.
Instinct is what they call it.
Instincts,
yeah.
Yes.
Because while he's physically fit, his battle instincts...
He's a little rusty, sure. Yeah,
...are off. When we get the best bit is the bit where Kevin has the flashbacks of all the great times that him and Takuma have had together.
like when they fought people on a mountain to the death.
Remember when we fought that robot?
Kevin's had quite the fucking time when you think about it.
He has, yes. And so he tears his mask off to show him that Miracle 2 is, in fact, Kevin Anderson.
I think Takuma knew that, didn't he?
I think he did, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that was a thing. I think he tore it off because he was crying so hard that it was filling up those goggles on his mask. Oh, dear.
And then Tanahashi drops the fall. Because they can't get in to break it up when the second uses his ridiculous...
Oh, the skewer. Yeah.
But also, Tiger Mask has figured out his new killer move, though.
Oh, he uses it on fucking Kevin. God
he
damn,
does,
Kevin.
He does, yes. It is a pretty great killer move.
I will admit, it looks cool. You can superimpose a tiger in the background and it looks fucking pretty fucking sweet. And it really mussed up Kevin's face. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, so it's the axe kick he was trying to do, but this rather than bring it down on the head, he brings it down on one shoulder and then brings his knee up to on the other side into their chin and basically twists their neck as a superimposed tiger's mouth appears over the top of this.
Chomping down on the other wrestler, yeah.
So it's like a tiger's biting their head off.
I think that was Takuma's thing, wasn't it? He said it's like, instead of just making an axe kick, how about we sandwich it? He's like, what?
Sandwich it? And then we finally see it.
Yeah.
For all the good it does them.
Yeah. I mean, like, at least he has a new killer move now anyway.
And so next week, it's a tag match with the two Tigers.
Okay.
I believe that was
I guess everyone else has been badly injured at this stage.
Yeah, I can't remember who they're facing, though. It would have to be either... There's only three guys left on the GWM side as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I'm guessing it should be Miracle 1 and Tiger the 2nd, Big Tiger the 2nd, but I wonder if it's going to be both the Tigers.
Tigers.
Yeah, all the Tigers. Tigers on all sides. Because it seems weird if the final is going to be Okada versus the third. Because I noticed Okada has not been pinned at all in the entire series. In fact, very rarely gets taken advantage of.
Yeah, it's like, whoa, we can't use Okada now. We got to save him. It's like, yeah, but he never fucking does anything. It's like, if you don't let him in the ring, he can't fucking do anything.
Yes. I mean, it could be good if like the fight against the third is just like over in seconds, Rainmaker pin.
Oh, dear.
Or it'd be like the match he actually had on at the weekend, which was a 60-minute draw.
If it comes to a draw on this one, though, they won't go to... Because they said I'm trying to figure out how they're going to do...
Because they're two down.
There's a tiebreaker.
They've got to win the next two. To make
the tiebreaker, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so a draw wouldn't do the trick, like.
No.
I'm not exactly sure what way they're going to go. Obviously, it has to end up with, you know, Tiger Mask versus the third, but...
Which Tiger?
they'll toss a coin.
Or they'll just double team him. They'll turn full heel.
Sure, why not? The guy's such a dick, it's fine.
It might take both of us. Or it might be versus Tiger the Great, the third, and a new robot. Or they'll beat this Tiger the Great, and it'll turn out that Tiger the Great is a robot.
I don't know. He didn't seem that impressed with the robot. I didn't think he was going to bring it back.
True. But who knows? Why was he making a robot in the first place?
So he could destroy it the same way he makes young wrestlers.
Righty-ho. On to My Hero Academia episode 24. Not coming more than... It must be more than 24 at this point. No, it is. Fight on Ida. Because I forgot there was only 13 episodes in the first season. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, fight on, Ruddy Man. This is another episode where they get to flesh out the rounds, which I think happened off screen in the comic.
Yeah, I feel like they skipped one, and I'm trying to think who, because there's actually, they run through a few matchups.
Yeah, you need to push the vine head girl out. The arena.
Yeah, he just runs behind her with his super speed and like just pushes her from the back. It's kind of childish, but it works.
It works. You'd expect that from him as
a very quick fucking thing.
Yes, yeah, so he wouldn't want to draw out a fight longer than it needs to be.
Yeah. That suits his style a lot better.
And your shadow guy beats the acid girl, doesn't she?
Because she can't get close enough to him. But then, of that ridiculous range.
Then he loses to Bakugo.
Because Bakugo, in the middle of the fight, figures out his weakness.
Yes.
The more light that there is, there's less shadow for him to draw on to make itself bigger. So it's his shadow is crying at that stage. Oh, and I think the fight before that was Bakugo versus Kirishima.
Yes, that's it, yeah.
And initially, Kirishima is actually kind of holding his own. But again, Bakugo figuring out the weakness in mid-fight, it's like you have to hold your hard form way too long. To the point where you're actually taking damage. Just to take the impacts of his thing. So I think they called it like a machine gun thing where he's just like making explosion on top of him.
But
so
then
he can't take it anymore, yeah.
And then the big fight is Aida versus Todoroki.
Yeah, and unlike the Midoriya one, it's obviously like supposed to compress time or uncompress time. It takes place in a very short amount of time, but you get a lot of kind of play-by-play, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. He's back to not using his fire. As I said, part of the thing is, like, yes, he had his big moment in the last round, so he's still processing that. But even while he's still processing that, he can still beat Aida.
Yes, that's kind of been the case. Like, he is ridiculously OP, and... I think it cuts to that stage, the conversation everybody's dead. It's like, oh, aren't you going to tell me to get out of my way, son? You're getting pretty good. You need to control your fire a bit better. But he's like, and it's like, no, it was weird in that last fight. I need to think about it because, like, I was using my firepower, but I wasn't thinking about you at all. Like, you didn't even fucking mean anything to me. So that was interesting. I'm going to have to think about that. And he walks off ignoring his dad. And his dad's like, the fuck? Weren't you using your fire? Come on, do it.
But yes, the important part though is not the sports day. It is the start of the next arc.
yeah.
Which happens where we see Aida trying to ring his brother up, and can't get hold of him before he goes to the next round. But then his mum rings him,
and he's like, "Oh, sorry, I lost the fight, ma'am." And
yes.
She's like, "No. This is very important. I need you to stay calm."
Yeah, but also his dialogue about how he talks to his mum makes you feel like there's a lot of, if not necessary, out... He feels pressure because of how his brother is.
Yeah, because of his brother in the family biz, and there's a lot of pressure in the family to excel.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if that even is necessary there.
Oh, I'm not even
family.
Sure. I don't think he puts it on himself.
Yes.
Like, either, like, standard fucking thing. He piled that onto himself, and we're going to see that fucking go badly for him.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We certainly are. Yes. Yes. His brother has been attacked by the hero killer, Stain.
I didn't think we were going to get a fully good look at him this episode, because they seem to be keeping him in shadows for so long.
Oh, no, we get a full good look at him.
Mm.
And, yes, he looks like a character from 90s Image comics.
Well, I was going to say, he kind of looks like a lanky Ninja Turtle.
That as well,
but,
yes.
Yeah, definitely. He's not going from the classic Golden Age of Heroes, he's coming from the 90s.
Yes, so there's only one hero who will let... He says he will let kill him.
Mm.
He doesn't say who it is, but obviously... You could work it out for yourselves.
I think he does say it out loud.
I don't think he says it in this episode. He will say eventually.
Oh, I thought he said it in this episode. I won't say it, just in case I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like talking about you damn heroes with your endorsement deals and shit. Like, he does start laying down some of his philosophy already.
Yeah, and then Kurogi shows up and gets a dagger stuck in him for his...
Yeah, but it's fine. It's just part of the teleportation list.
And he says,
like, hey, we want to have a talk to you.
Yes, which is great. I don't know if that happens straight away next week, though.
Mm.
That talk is... There's recurring things which happen in the comic. I think next week is the first time it happens.
Mm.
Of people treating Shigaraki exactly as he should be treated.
Yep.
We shall wait and see. Yeah, so this is one thing I like about these, is how the arcs overlap. It's like we've still got the final to come of the sports day, but already we're into this other storyline with...
Yeah, it's nicely kind of layered in with the stuff that's happening in the sports day, which has a lot of big moments for characters, but not so much world-changing stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I think... I don't know if he mentions who he'd let kill him, but he definitely mentions the things he doesn't think heroes should be, which is for fame and heroes for money, and some other things like that. Which, of course, is we got a hero for money in our story. That is Ochako's motivation for being a hero. It's like, okay.
Well, Ida says that's a positive thing.
Yes, it's played as a positive thing, but yes, there will not be a positive thing to sustain, though.
Mm.
He'd consider her a false hero.
I'm trying to think what else happens in this one. There's a lot of the matchups, obviously.
Yeah, there's lots of shots of the digitally painted audience.
Sure.
Which seems to have only come in within the last few episodes.
Hmm.
Maybe they just didn't have time to do the cutaways to a close-up of a bunch of people.
Yeah, that's feasible. Oh, the thing I meant to say is... Explosion... Kid. I've forgotten his name now.
Bakugo.
Is Bakugo starting to respect his classmates a bit more? Because I think in the fight with your man, he seemed to respect the fact that he could take fucking the amount of punishment he was dealing. The fight with Kirishima. And then the fight with the shadow guy.
Yeah.
He was just like, yeah. He was like, listen. He was kind of like, yeah, I fucking got you down, motherfucker. It's a pity because you were actually badly matched up against me.
Yes, yeah.
It's like your power set does not... do well against my power set, and that's just bad luck. And the way he says that, I was like, is that like him fucking respecting other people? Because I don't remember that from the comic. I guess it's difficult to remember with that character.
Yes, because he, as we'll see, he'll do something which makes that all evaporate quite quickly.
Sure.
The other thing we're forgetting is All Might and Midoriya being told off by Recovery Girl.
Yeah.
And the key thing of, we learned that All Might didn't have a quirk either before he was given One for All.
It was nice with him in his skinny form, kind of in the waiting room, and the lads are kind of visiting Midoriya.
Yes.
And it's like, they assume it's a relative or something.
Yes.
Because they don't recognize who the skinny dude is. But Recovery Girl saying she won't treat this kind of injury again. And it's like, okay, I actually have to do operations on you to get those bone shards out of your fucking muscle tissue and shit. And your hand is going to be permanently slightly fucked up.
Yeah.
There's a no 100% fix in that. You really messed up your right hand.
Yes.
But yeah, Midoriya's like, fucking, yeah, I know you were taking the teaching job so you could find a new hero to pass down All for One. And he's like, yeah, I could have given him to Todoroki and he would have been a fucking amazing fucking hero. I think he describes him as a superhero rather than a hero for once.
Yeah.
But he's like, yeah, but, you know, I didn't have a quirk either, so fuck it. Like,
yeah, but also he recognizes, this, particularly this time, he's like, Midoriya helped out Todoroki without being asked. And even if Todoroki, beyond that, Todoroki didn't want help.
And, yeah, I did like the way Recovery Girl was saying, it's like, okay, you have to fucking give out to him for doing this.
Yes, you can't praise him.
And he's like, I can't, listen, you kind of fucked up there, but, you know, helping someone without even being asked and getting yourself hurt over it, that's what a hero does. And it's like, God damn it, you had one job.
Well, as I say, that, but yeah, at the same time, that is the creed of this comic book.
Yeah,
and what this comic believes. Because we know from the start that Midoriya is going to be the world's greatest hero. This is just the story of how he gets there.
Amazing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is the key thing, because as it should play out with Stain as well.
I did like the Midoriya's reaction to it. It's like, wait, you didn't have a quirk? He's like, well, you never fucking asked. good stuff.
Yes, which I think eventually someone else has to. Yeah, I like the way the older characters also have to occasionally tell All Might off, and then you kind of get a glimpse without seeing the full flashback of like him as Midoriya and Recovery Girl, and the character we'll see in the next arc.
Yeah,
being his All Might to them.
Yeah, exactly. I think you do get a flash of his master. I'm not even going to use his name because he'll show up pretty much this season, it seems.
Yeah, probably in 2-3 episodes time, I think.
Yep, not that long away.
Oh boy, yeah, this is a really good show.
Even
so, as I say, the digitally painted crowd scenes are fine in order to get the great action you get elsewhere.
I mean, like, I'm willing to let it have, like, a bit of shitty animation this episode, considering last episode.
Yes,
I'm just like, yes, I'm still savoring that. And, see, the thing is, like, that was, like, what, fucking, that wasn't even the semifinals, and that was, like, the highlight of this tournament so far. And next week it's fucking Todoroki and Bakugo, which actually should be pretty sweet.
Next up is Dragon Ball Super 94. The Emperor of Evil returns. A reception of mysterious assassins. Now, first things first. I'm pretty sure the subtitle said they were planning on assassinating Beerus, but it's quite clear in this one. That was last week, but this week they are trying to assassinate Frieza. So
I'd have to go back and watch. Yeah.
I assume that was a mistranslation. Maybe they were referring to somebody within, like, using some metaphor for him, and then it got
like, we have to kill Beerus's team. And it just came out as Beerus. Like,
but yeah, it's specifically Frieza they're trying to kill. And that mouse, Quietus, or whatever he's called, Quietler, he is an almighty dick, because he's not even going to do it himself. He's going to pawn it off on poor old Universe 9, who I now feel sorry for, even though they're jerks as well.
They're stupid. I think that's kind of like the thing where he's like, hey, do you know what I heard about fucking Universe 7? It's like, what? It's like, yeah, they're going to fucking like take out your team first. And he's like, son of a bitch. It's like, if I were you, I'd fucking get some assassins. It's like, when I get in trouble for that? It's like, no. You don't do it. You just hire someone else to do it. You'd be grand.
And then he's like, ah, that's great. Either they manage to kill Frieza and that's taken care of, or they get caught out by Zeno and they get wiped out.
Easy for Mr. Mouse.
Oh, man, yeah. And then the great stuff of Frieza and Goku together.
that's probably like my second. It's probably my favorite bit of the thing.
I don't know. Vegeta explained to Trunks why.
That's my second favorite. It's very close to my first favorite thing that happens in it. But there's a lot of just backstabby shittiness between Goku and Frieza. That's just like, oh, this is beautiful. But yeah, the bit where they have the chariot up on the wall and Trunks is woken up and it's like, hey, what's that thing over there? Oh, these are people coming to your sister's bar mitzvah or whatever the fuck. I don't know what she makes up. And it's like, isn't that guy Frieza? Isn't he like a fucking like super criminal? And Vegeta has to go, son, Frieza's a good guy now. And you can see him beating himself up, and you get the internal monologue. He's like, I can't believe I have to say this about Frieza. But you know, it's I can't believe I have to lie to my son as well on top of that. And then he just sulks for a while after that.
You've also got Krillin not having anything to say to Android 17.
Like, he initially thinks, like, because I thought Goku was pamming 17 off of him, because 17 was going to be slightly annoyed that Trunks isn't a capable teenager / 20-year-old, but is a small child to mind his island. I thought that's why he was telling Krillin to do it. I think he was just being lazy then.
Yes.
But Krillin is like, I really don't have anything to talk about with my brother-in-law. But then again, my wife changed considerably, so then maybe he's lightened up a bit. No, he is not. Also, your wife hasn't lightened up that much.
And then, yes, he accidentally gets the name of Marin wrong by just like a smidge, which apparently is like the name of a former girlfriend of Krillin's in some filler.
Oh, shit. That would be doubly why she was really pissed. That, I think he calls her Maron.
Yes, yeah, so 2 hours rather than 1 hour. Yeah.
Oh, no, the other
or
way around.
The other way around, yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You got to elongate it or something, Maron. And she's like, if you call him that again, I'll fucking kill you. That's just how those twins act.
Yes. Maron asking how old he was, and he goes, I'm 17.
Kind of like the wind blowing. It's like, that's a bad joke.
That's his attempt at making a joke. Piccolo shaking hands with him.
That was a nice moment. I also like the way that 18 reacting to Krillin and 17 just actually talking about the tournament and stuff, because that's the bit where neither of them realize that they've kind of loosened up enough to talk to each other like this. But Piccolo kind of coming down is like, you son of a bitch, welcome to the team. That was really nice, because yeah, they had some beef obviously.
And we get a bit more of Master Roshi training. He's now off beating Yajirobe up.
Well, I mean, like, that's what you got to progress to. Can you kick the shit out of Yajirobe, one of the most important people on this planet?
Well, he would. Somehow. I was like, he would be if, yes, he's good at surviving.
Yes.
As I always point out, when he first showed up, he was exactly as powerful, if not more powerful, than Goku. It's the fact that he's lazy, therefore yeah. He's not got any better since then.
Yeah, yeah. poor Yajirobe.
Yeah, I like the bit when Roshi's about to leave. Oh, I forgot, I can't fly.
Yeah, it looks like he's about to leap off the fucking Kami house or tower or whatever it's called, yeah.
Which, knowing this series, that will also have some weird payoff in the tournament of him not being able to fly will be his undoing or something.
Oh, I thought it might be a benefit.
Possibly, like, could
maybe
be
someone
as
else
well,
is
yes.
Floating in midair and gets blown away, and he's just like, well, I'm just standing on the ground, so sorted.
Yeah, so we get the, my hand slipped. Oh, my hand slipped as well, with Frieza and Goku punching each other in the stomachs.
Just, it's so shitty and petty. Like, it was basically what was bubbling under the surface last episode. Like, straight up, kind of like, whoops, sorry, buddy. This episode.
What does he get Babar as a present? Or what does Bulma get Babar as a present in the end?
I think it's like a fruit or something.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Bulma gave me this to give to you. And she's like, re-gift. All right.
That's it, yeah.
Which is a pretty good joke, yeah.
She's like, all right, you two, bugger off.
She just like they're just like, hey, how about we fucking do the thing? It's like, you know, through gritted teeth, pretending that they like each other. She's like, come on, fucking leave before you wreck my fucking house.
She
knows the score.
And then the assassins show up, and Goku's like, we haven't got time for this, Frieza. Grab hold of my hand, and we'll teleport. But Frieza powers up, and he's ready to whack all these assassins as a warm-up.
Yeah, he shoots a guy and is like, whoops, hand slipped again. let's kill everyone here as a warm-up. Sure, fuck it. I'm here, I might as well.
And then the best, you see him powering up, and then it's like powering up how much you see of it from different distances away from where he is.
People are acting, is that the sun? That's weird.
Yeah, this was another good episode.
Yep, It's weird. They're spending so much time fucking around. They're drawing out that time so fucking long, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I think it's going to, in the end, make the tournament mean more, because it's reacquainted us with all these characters.
Mm.
It's given us an idea of, yes, they've got better in different ways, so they're not just going to get wiped out.
Yeah, and the guys who are on the lower scale of power levels are still going to matter, or they're probably like, it's going to come down to like the big fucking guns at the end, but they're still going to make a difference. Yeah.
Yes, and we've got an idea of the big guns from the other universes as well, except for four. So goodness knows what. All we've seen of them is that spy, and I guess he's probably not going to be on the team either. But so we don't even know if Nine's got seven other people yet.
Yeah, it's doing this weird thing of like spinning its wheels, but I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, there was some more God Tube stuff as well, but other people using it.
Yeah, they were trying to look up Frieza on it, and they're like, he's a real piece of work.
Oh yeah, this Whis also manages to get everyone to calm down about Frieza being part of the team as well. This it's like, well, us all being wiped out, would be much worse. Of course, Whis is quite merry because he knows he's not getting wiped out regardless. Yeah.
He's grand, like whatever fucking goes down. He's, I mean, he might be out of a job, which is a bit shameful, but other than that, he's sorted. oh dear, and I'm really enjoying this.
Arena is almost built. We're almost there.
So close. Yeah.
Where are
we? I'm still questioning if Frieza's going to be on the final team, just with the amount of fuckery.
I don't know. So I think he probably will be at this point. I'm going to put my bet on. I'm sure it's probably already been revealed, actually, when it's starting. Because normally you get episode previews a good few episodes ahead. But you think maybe at the start of the next season's anime would be the time to start the tournament proper, I guess.
Yeah, and within the new season kind of thing.
Because that gives us two more episodes of dawdling around and beating up assassins and actually travelling to the arena.
And being petty to each other, yeah.
Yeah, and getting a look at all the other guys' teams.
Oh, that's true as well, yeah. Like you said, we don't know the full layout of a lot of the teams.
Yeah, because we've only seen one from whichever the Cleopatra's universe. The magical girl. but yeah, I love Dragon Ball Super. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and of course, I say it often enough, but it's the best like Dragon Ball's been.
I was looking, I was starting making the notes for our next season review, and I was like, I'm not sure if anything we're watching is ending.
So wait, we're just going to add to the pile?
Yeah, that's the worry I've got.
Ooh.
Is anything, tough. Yeah, because we know Bono Bono's carrying on going, Gomachan's carrying on going, Ninja Gun and Samurai Master's carrying on going, Rage of Bahamut definitely is. Oh, Attack on Titan will be ending, you're only getting one. So there you go. Haybot's not ending, My Hero Academia's not ending, Dragon Ball's not ending, Tiger Mask will be ending, so there we go.
Yes.
So we've got to maybe able to squeeze two things in.
Because, I mean, like, the rest of these things, I'm like, we can't drop any of these.
And Niall's already earmarked that one about the gambling school. And I've earmarked Guru, so.
There was one or two things I was interested in, but nothing I know for sure, yeah.
Yeah, October's when the avalanche comes. yeah. Having said that, most of these things will be ending. And being replaced by things we watched in previous episodes of Let's Go. All your favourites are back. Yeah, I'm not sure. It's going to be quite easy to pick the ones, though, in October, because I think a lot of them are, like, these are just returning shows.
Right.
Righty-ho. That wraps it up for this week's episode. What's coming up on Secret of the Sailor Madness, Dwayne?
Let me think. Crap, I've forgotten what's coming out next, but what's up currently is, I've forgotten the name.
it's French thing? Your French
yes.
thing? It's a French cartoon, we know that much.
It's a French cartoon. Blast.
Begins with a G, doesn't it?
Oh, I thought it began with an M. Obviously, I'm fucking completely wrong.
If only there was a website you could look at.
If only I could get my computer to respond while I'm trying to stall for time. I'll find it now. Hang on. Where's that bastard?
Gandahar.
Yes.
I was right. I did begin with a G.
Yeah, Gandahar, 1988. Why am I remembering everything about it now? We've covered the director's stuff before, but yeah, it's a pretty fun one. And I've forgotten what's coming out soon, but... somewhere towards the end of the month, we'll be doing our big 150 with Justice League, the animated series, the one before Justice League Unlimited.
Yeah. Rightio, and we just did Big O with Dwayne and Niall and Elliot on Dynamite in the Brain, and then we're doing a famous anime podcast also with Niall and Dwayne and Elliot. It's almost as if our production plans are transparent. Right, so we'll be back here next week, hopefully with Niall. Goodbye.
Bye.